G'day you mob, how's it going? Welcome to this episode of Aussie English. This is a special three-part series, okay? So this is going to be one episode in a three-part series where I interview my dear friend Marcus Kane. Marcus, or Muzz, as I know him, and I went to school together and grew up really good friends all throughout high school. We hung out a lot, we did music, and we also did a lot of working out and fitness-related stuff over the past probably two decades or more now. So I decided to get Muzz on the podcast to talk about a few topics, including what he's been doing for me and my weight program, my goals, everything like that. We talk about nutrition and eating disorders in the second episode, which is a sort of specialty that he deals with his clients, helping them overcome things like bulimia. And then in the third one, we talk about social pressures on men in particular to look a certain way. So things like bodybuilding, celebrities, movies, and the use of illicit drugs or steroids. A lot of these drugs aren't necessarily illegal, but there's a sort of shady side to it. So we talk about that as well. Anyway, without any further ado, guys, let's get into today's episode. I give you my strength and conditioning and nutrition coach, Marcus Kane. Let's go. G'day, guys. Welcome to this episode of Aussie English. Marcus Kane is back, strength and conditioning and nutrition coach and extraordinaire, and someone who specializes in eating disorders, usually amongst men, I take it, you were saying.
Yes.
So if I got anything wrong there, please correct me.
No, that's good. That's fine. Obviously, disordered eating amongst men and women has a lot of crossover, but specifically when it comes to the disordered eating side of things, I work with men with an extensive background in training and dieting and kind of the fitness industry. So we do see, I just want to clarify there for anyone listening, and in terms of disordered eating work, there is a huge difference between disordered eating that might be present in someone that has a history of trauma and anxiety versus someone who has developed a pattern of disordered eating as a result of extensive, let's call it, fitness industry enthusiasm.
It is interesting. I was going to ask, we did an episode previously on nutrition and eating disorders, and we didn't cover whether or not there is a significant difference between the way in which eating disorders manifest themselves between the sexes.
There is a lot of crossover, of course, but there are different pressures on, you know, different sexes, and, you know, we set different goals in regards to our, we're talking exclusively here, disordered eating that comes about as a result of, you know, diet and exercise and just like an over-enthusiastic approach to dieting and fitness. There is common ground, of course, but obviously if we look at the kind of social pressure that's put on women to always be smaller, always be skinnier, always be feminine or whatever society wants to call that, and then the pressure on men to always be bigger, always be stronger, always be louder. So that can manifest as bulimia, binge eating, those kind of things in men that women do suffer with, anorexia a little bit more. But there's definitely crossover. But
sorry to interrupt you. I remember the singer, I've forgotten his surname, but Daniel from Silverchair suffered from anorexia for a long time, didn't he?
Yeah, it's not, anorexia is the one that's not as common in men, but there definitely are men that suffer with it. I spoke in our last interview about how I was kind of touching on that zone. It turned into more of a bulimic pattern for me, but yeah, there are definitely some men that suffer with it for sure.
I guess there's fewer pressures on men to be smaller or thinner, right? Or leaner. The lean thing is there, I guess, but usually that's coupled with wanting to have a lot of muscle on you, and you can't really do that without much food, right? Yeah. Well, today I wanted to get into sort of fake natties. I mean, we can talk about what that is at some point when we discuss this celebrity body, social media, mental health, and pressure on men.
Not because I don't think these issues are important for women, but I don't think they're spoken about nearly as much for men. And I guess I'm basing that on my own personal exposure or, you know, experience with these issues in men and the lack of it growing up. I think, you know, to give a bit of background, recently Marcus has been helping me with my training and I've been getting into a lot of the fitness videos online through YouTube, and it's led me down a rabbit hole where you end up, you know, finding one video about doing bicep curls and then the next video is about steroid use and you're like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then the next one's about, you know, and so you end up, I ended up diving down the rabbit hole of, I guess, what do you call it? You wouldn't call them illicit drugs. I guess in some cases they might be illegal, but, you know, steroid use in sports, bodybuilding, you know, aesthetics in men as well. And then the association with celebrities who seem to all be doing it and social media, which seems to have this magnifying effect of rewarding people doing it and giving them more followers and more audience. And then there's so many interplays here, right? With mental health of people watching these people on social media, there's the pressure on the people watching them to try and replicate that. And then obviously the people on social media who aren't being 100% transparent about what they're actually using, leading younger men in particular to think, I can achieve this naturally because this guy says I can. Oh no, 5 years later, I've achieved nothing. I'll just go to steroids. Fuck it. You know, like, and then you realize, oh, well, they were using steroids. So I should have just taken
the whole time. Yeah. Anyways, so I think
there's a lot to unpack.
We could unpack this box for days, but I think something that you just touched on there is not realizing that, you know, if you're starting out on a fitness journey or if you're looking to improve your body or your fitness or anything like that, even if you've been doing it for a few years at this point, not realizing that the people that you might be looking up to are using some kind of performance enhancing drug can be a catalyst to just continually think, well, I'm still not achieving that goal. I must need to be more strict with my diet. I must need to train harder. And that just puts people in the position, like myself when I was a teenager, of just keeping on raising the bar for how much work needs to be done or how much work we think needs to be done in order to achieve something until it gets to the point where it becomes a clinical disorder. Whereas, you know, we reach a certain point with how much work we're putting in, how strict we are with our nutrition, and then diminishing returns after that. And anything more than that starts to touch on, you know, our natural genetic potential and being clear on what results are achievable with certain approaches.
Let's start with the pressure that men feel then to achieve these kinds of results. Do you remember the first time you realized, you know, or got the opinion or felt that external pressure to have that body? You know, do you remember what that felt like? And you know, can you tell me a bit about where you think that pressure comes from in society?
Well, I grew up watching Arnold Schwarzenegger films, like every guy our age, you know, like these days, I guess it's The Rock who people are watching. But, you know, when we were kids, it was Arnold Schwarzenegger and those kind of 70s and 80s guys. And, you know, we watch those films from when we're super, super young, and like even young kids are watching The Rock in some of his films now. And I remember, and we,
Dylan, you son of a bitch. Everyone knows that line, right? Boom.
Yeah. And we just, you know, and no one explains to us really. I think my dad may have mentioned it once when I was a kid, but you know, that these guys are on steroids, but we just absorb these images subconsciously, you know, just as we're watching films. I think, you know, the presence of certain body types and body ideals in Hollywood is just crazy. Like, even if you look at your average like kids film now, the average like American made like kids film,
superhero films,
Yeah, superhero guys. But like even the bodies that we see in kids' films are just savage.
Mm-hmm. Both on both ends, right, too, because I guess the thing that's coming out here for me is I remember always thinking about, geez, women have it hard. You know, they are constantly bombarded with these images of photoshopped, you know, the top 0.1% in attractiveness women who are supermodels, who are clearly on a very strict diet, if not borderline, you know, eating disorders. And they hear none of that message and they just see these images everywhere and think, I don't measure up. But I never really thought about until later in life how that analogous thing is happening with men, but in the opposite direction, where we're measuring ourselves up against these huge dudes or these really physically, you know, these phenoms, and thinking that it's all natural, especially from a young age when you have no real understanding of what it takes. You know, you don't even really know that they go to the gym. You just think this guy's huge, right? I mean, I was playing a video game the other day called Civilization 6, right? So it's like a strategy game on the PlayStation, on computer and Xbox. And every single one of the guy characters is jacked, you know? I just think, you know, what the fuck, man? These characters are all like from the 1900s all the way back to, you know, like Greek people and Romans and stuff. And I'm like, none of these dudes would have been on steroids. And yet, why do they feel it necessary to show every single one of these men who isn't wearing clothing or has a little bit of clothing on with just these, you know, 50-inch biceps and just shredded abs, you know? It's just, it blew my mind because I'm like, that is not required for me to enjoy this game.
But it plays into the fantasy, I guess. And an interesting thing there is when we compare, say, when you see a soldier or when you see like a character in like an action-based video game, versus what an actual special forces soldier looks like in reality. Like I have a good friend who is an ex-spec ops soldier, and he, you know, special forces soldiers, they don't look like those people in the games. They're actually quite lean. They're built for endurance, a lot of these guys.
When you've got a gun, you don't really need big muscles.
But I think, yeah, it's interesting to look at that. That if we look at people like the, you know, the Navy SEALs and the British SAS and all these, like, you know, some of the baddest dudes on the planet, from that sense, they're actually not built like the Hollywoodized versions of them. Like, you know, there's this huge discrepancy between reality and that kind of Hollywood or gaming fantasy that so many of us are watching. But that fantasy wouldn't exist if it didn't sell.
Yes. And that's the hard part, right?
Mm, yeah.
So when did the curtain sort of drop for you where you were like, you know, holy shit, this is effectively unachievable unless I do drugs, unless I inject my leg once or twice a week with, you know, testosterone or anabolic steroids, there is no chance I'm going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone in Rambo or whatever it is.
It took about a decade for me to get there.
Yeah.
And that's a decade of experimenting with all these different types of training, getting an extensive education, like a professional fitness industry education. I became a professional with the industry. And, you know, after a decade of training my ass off, studying my ass off, training clients, training myself, and essentially dedicating like a massive portion of my life to optimal strength and conditioning and body sculpting training, I realized like, it's like you just hit certain points and it's like, that's as far as you go without any further assistance. Like everyone's got a genetic potential. And I want to stress as well that most people have not reached their genetic potential. Like it takes a lot of really dedicated work to reach your genetic potential. Like when we see people who just are nowhere near, their genetic potential, saying like, oh yeah, of course. Say like,
I just put my hand up, guys.
Yeah, like those other people, they get those results because they're on steroids. It's like, well, sure, people might be on steroids, but also there's that balance of like, you've got to work really hard mm-hmm. at the same time. So I guess after I'd been working for about a decade, personally, professionally, and I realized that, okay, as far as bodybuilding is concerned and natural bodybuilding is concerned, I've probably gotten quite close to my genetic potential. And, you know, I looked good, but Jesus, it was just so hard to maintain. It was crazy hard to maintain. And yet we see people kind of popping in and out of those physiques for films and everything like that all the time. So it was just after a long period of really hard work and thorough study that I got a proper picture of what's really going on.
And how did you feel at the time about knowing, you know, realizing that someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger took steroids to look the way he did?
I think people like Arnold and those like really big guys, like the bodybuilding competition guys, I don't think it's any real mystery mm-hmm. that those really big guys are on steroids yep. because, you know, they're quite transparent about it. Like Arnold has flat out said that he used steroids, and sure, fine. But the area that I think is most difficult is when most of us guys look at those really big dudes and go, okay, so they're clearly on steroids. What about the people who are like the more like modern Hollywood kind of body? Like we're talking the physiques in Marvel films, for example. Those guys aren't bodybuilder physiques. Like they're not, you know, they couldn't step on stage for a Mr. Universe competition or anything like that. You know, what about other physiques that are not quite bodybuilding physiques, but still like look really good and are just really ripped and just have big shoulders and everything like that? What happens there? And I think that it's like, it's so easy to see that the giant guys are using something and we expect them to.
Yeah.
But what about the physiques that are more closely associated with what the everyday person might consider to be kind of the ideal male Hollywood body?
I think that's a good point because, you know, in one case, bodybuilding isn't necessarily thrust down the throat of every single person who watches films or, you know, looks at ads or it's just not
anymore anyway.
You kind of have to go and find it, right? And get into that niche to really be exposed to it. And then when you do, it isn't a secret. It's kind of like, there's no drug testing here, guys. You know, it's pretty much open season. Do whatever you want. And the only way to achieve any of this, it's up to you. You just do whatever you want. Yeah. We're just going to judge you on the results. But then it's, you end up in this other world where it is being largely used behind the scenes as a sort of way of achieving certain results very rapidly with, you know, very short time frames. And it's done in a very shady, dodgy, shadowy kind of way where there isn't transparency. And I think, if we skip straight to the celebrity side of things, it seems like my view of what must be happening is that these guys are getting bent over a barrel when they sign agreements to do certain films and say, you know, they say, you need to get this certain body. It needs to be in a certain amount of time. You can do that however you'd like. but you are not allowed to talk about having to use any kind of illicit substances or things that are not off the shelf from your average, pharmacy. And if you do, we'll sue you, you know? So I have a feeling that is why you just hear zero discussion about this in the movie industry in particular, where you would imagine they're not competing in a sport, but they are competing with one another to get these roles, in which case you would imagine, of course, if it comes down to you versus Chris Hemsworth, who's going for a certain role, I'm going to be taking the drugs and, you know, I'm going to be... I'm not going to be relying on hard work to compete with that kind of competition. And so considering it's such a ruthless environment,
yeah,
of course it's going on, but it is the annoying part is that they pretend that it isn't. And then children see these films and think this is the norm and that this is what you should aim for and that you can just achieve it naturally, right? And worse, the thing that really shits me is when these people get interviewed. And I've seen a few videos now where there's quite a few famous people saying, all I did was eat a lot of chicken, broccoli, and brown rice. And I put on 30 pounds in 7 weeks or 12 weeks. You know, so that's like 15 kilos of muscle in 2 months. And you're just like, how can you say that with a straight face? You know, when when you're 48 years old, like, come on. Come on, dude.
And I think the, you know, we're taking a few swings at Hollywood here, but as well, it, you know, social media has seen a massive increase in this kind of stuff. Like, people are just being rewarded for taking, for using steroids. Steroid culture is actually becoming a thing to the point where teenagers on TikTok are openly talking about like doing steroids. And it's such a huge box to unpack, because steroids are not the most dangerous drugs in the world to be using. But oh good Lord, where do I even start? They have been turned
into this kind of boogie monster. And I was watching that documentary that you recommended, Bigger, Faster, Stronger.
Film. Everyone should watch it. Yeah.
Bigger, Faster, Stronger. Check the film out. But effectively, they were saying it is steroids are these weird things where we hate when people do it in sports, but we love when Arnold does it. And we'll glorify it in one realm, but we'll, you know, diminish it in another. And we never say, you know, it's, you know, it's like a Ferrari, but on steroids. We say that all the time, but you'll never say it's like a Ferrari, but on cocaine. And so steroids in the zeitgeist kind of has this position that we kind of do like and hold up and play a part, a role in sort of, you know, hyping up, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. We see cases of people claiming to have experienced like life-threatening or just life-ruining side effects from steroids. You know, we see people just in terrible, terrible shape, you know, within years of doing steroids. We see people dying early. We see people developing all these conditions and just looking like shit after steroid use. And then at the same time, we do see other people who've been using anabolic steroids for 25 to 30 years, and they're just in great shape. They're like these 60, 70 year old celebrities who are just like in killer shape. So that begs the question, like, what's the difference? Like, what's really going on here? And one of the, I think education and privilege plays a huge factor. You can, like, someone can just order anabolic steroids online without too much effort.
Hashtag don't do that.
Don't do that. No, because people do that. But like, if someone does that and fucks it up, sorry, am I allowed to swear on this podcast? I don't know.
I've already sworn.
I ask that every week, I think. But yeah, like if someone just orders it online and fucks it up, it can be like life ruining shit.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who, if anyone has a chance of being able to do it and use it for the long term and actually remain in some degree, like an optimally function and happily healthy human being, there needs to be medical supervision. There needs to be like private doctors involved, that you need to be in a privileged enough position to be able to have almost a team of people helping you do it as safely as is possible. But then when we're talking about steroids aren't the only performance enhancing drug out there. Like when we talk about those giant physiques, and you know, obviously anabolic steroids play a role in there, but there are other performance enhancing drugs that are arguably lower risk and way more common that still give people an edge when it comes to physiques. And I'm talking about peptides right now. So steroids are tied into, you know, the how testosterone works in the body, and obviously testosterone being the male sex hormone and muscle mass and all that kind of stuff. Like we're all pretty familiar with what testosterone does. Essentially, it makes you jacked. Whereas human growth hormone, on the other hand, is responsible for repair and regeneration. And a lot of people use testosterone and anabolic steroids and human growth hormone at the same time.
Yeah.
Though there is a difference between, say, injecting a person with human growth hormone and injecting someone with, say, other substances. I'm hesitant to name them here, but like total transparency, this is something that I've tried. I tried a combination of peptides, CJC1295 and ipamorelin.
And you should probably mention these weren't illegal drugs.
Yeah, they weren't actually illegal. You can get these through the right channels, like legally in many, many countries. But the thing is, the way those two drugs worked, I'm not on them anymore. I tried them for a period of time to see what it was like. And coming off those is something that we'll get to in just a moment. But so those two drugs together stimulate the pituitary gland. They make the pituitary gland release human growth hormone. So there is like a difference between injecting yourself just with human growth hormone and using a peptide, you know, CJC, ipamorelin, these kind of things that essentially stimulate the release of human growth hormone via the pituitary gland. So this is where there's this whole spectrum of different things that people are doing. And it's not just like someone is either on anabolic steroids or they're completely natural. There is this massive spectrum and many different options. And bodybuilding federations or different bodybuilding competitions do test for these different drugs. And there are different competitions that test for certain drugs, but not others. And you're allowed to use something, but not something else. And it's not a black and white thing anymore. It's far from black and white.
Oh man. I had that moment with you the other day where I was telling you about watching a few of these videos online and just being like, oh my God. All of these elite sports, the Olympics, like we think that it's, you know, the odd person is doing it and getting caught because they were stupid. And then you dive in and you're like, they're all doing it in one way or another. Like most of them may be in the gray zone and, you know, sort of touching in the dark zone, but to get to that level and to actually compete at that level, there's no way almost to do it naturally, right? And well, I think that I lost my innocence to some degree, I think.
I'm learning sorry,
brother. No, it's not your fault. And I mean, one of the things though that I think it was Bigger, Faster, Stronger, that film where they were talking about the Tour de France and how, you know, you almost can't do that naturally because it would break down your bones and your muscles to the point where you would be sick, you know, if not on death's doorstep, because you would after that amount of competition and damage done to the body, it's almost unfathomable that you could do that without some kind of assistance, as let alone someone to win that. And I think, but it's an interesting thing where, have you seen the film Icarus?
No, I haven't.
That was one where a cyclist effectively says, you know what, I've been trying all my life to be a competitor. I'm, you know, moderately good, but never got anywhere near the Tour de France people. I'm going to try taking anabolic steroids and blood doping or whatever it is and see how I go. And throughout that, he shows that it makes a difference and he does pretty well, but by no way does it put him anywhere near the guys at the top, you know, showing that it does help, but there are so many other variables that are also involved.
So many, like, I mean, we've got it, like, when we look at performance, especially not just aesthetics, because you can use performance-enhancing drugs to create a great-looking body with hard work. I got to say, always with really, really fucking hard work. There's no such thing as sitting on our couch eating fucking Doritos and taking steroids.
That
and
will just get you fat quickly.
No, that would be a terrible... terrible, terrible thing. So it always hard work. But then when we look at performance, especially at that really high level, we're looking at biomechanics as well, like biomechanics and, you know, genetic potential. And then we're looking at things like how different athletes handle stress, different athletes' psychological history, the coach that an athlete has and how well that coach can really get in an athlete's head and provide that balance of push and drive and then care on the other side of things. Like, there are so many things that really go to bring about that result. And, you know, we could really unpack that box over, you know, multiple hours for weeks at a time. So I guess what we were talking about here is really just to kind of bring some awareness to the fact that, you know, these things are out there.
Yeah.
And if there was a message that I wanted anybody listening to this to hear, it's that don't always trust what you're seeing when you watch a film, when you watch the Olympics, when you watch sport of any description. You know, don't always trust it. Like, educate yourself as far as if you're into training for performance or physique, educate yourself through a reliable mentor, because sometimes looking for things and, you know, that whole phrase now, I did my own research, that's fucked, because there's so, like, it's what so possible.
Yeah,
it's so possible to do your own research now and just come across vast quantities of misleading information. So, you know, mentoring, proper education, like these kind of things, if you are chasing a goal, it's really important to get it. And when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs, there's just an entire spectrum of things that people use in between being completely natural and using fully-fledged, like, anabolic steroids.
Well, it is funny how much some of them are taboo and some of them aren't, right? Like, I can drink a coffee before a race or something, and that's perfectly fine. But if I were to test for, you know, methamphetamines, that would not be okay. Or, but it's, and, you know, another example was Tiger Woods getting laser eye surgery so that now he has better than 20/20 vision. And it's kind of like, well, if naturally he didn't have good vision, or at least his vision was degrading, how is it any different from someone who is getting older and wants to compete with the younger people taking steroids to increase their muscle mass, when you're getting laser eye surgery so that your eye, your vision is as good or not, if not better than your competition to give you an edge? All right. And it is weird that we think that's okay, but that other things like testosterone replacement isn't okay.
Here's a head scratcher for you. So the natural levels of testosterone and human growth hormone in your average 20-year-old are going to be much higher than they are in your average 40-something-year-old. So is it wrong for an athlete in their 40s to take part in legal hormone therapy that bumps their, say, testosterone and human growth hormone back up to what it was in their 20s, but still within natural ranges? That's the kind of moral gray area that we're looking at here, because you might get two athletes where one is suffering from low testosterone, maybe due to some lifestyle factors that they didn't have as much control over as someone else, maybe some genetic factors. And as a result, their competitor has naturally higher testosterone and human growth hormones than they do. but it might be considered illegal for them to artificially bridge that gap.
Yeah.
So this is where, like, huh. So, you know, say hypothetically, someone, an athlete, two athletes, they could be twins. They're raised in different environments. They both have the same drive and the same motivation and the same passion for the same sport, and they both end up competing against each other. The one athlete was raised in a very privileged and supportive environment, whereas another athlete was raised in an environment that was, you know, very high stress, you know, so the whole nature versus nurture thing, that second athlete's nurture, their environment, placed them at a disadvantage. Because, you know, things like testosterone and human growth hormone and natural levels of those hormones are influenced heavily by things like the quality of sleep that we get,
yeah,
you know, and the stress that we experience in our life. So one of those twins, that more privileged twin, might do better than his or her brother or sister just as a result of privilege.
Yeah.
Which then in turn has an impact on their physiology.
He's taking that privilege drug.
Yeah. So that, like, that's a head scratcher.
Well, it gets to
ponder that
point
one for a while.
We're allowed a bit of difference, just not too much. And it's not allowed to be too, you know, putting your hand on the scale can be done a little bit, but not too much. One of the interesting things out of that film was the fact that this is starting to sound like a review of that film, but was when the cyclist was saying, oh, so I can sleep in a hyperbaric chamber that effectively reduces the amount of oxygen in there so that it feels like I'm at high altitude and my body creates more red blood cells to carry more oxygen around my body, or I can go to high altitude training, you know, centers and train there for a month or two and get my blood level up. But I can't blood dope, where I take blood out of my system, save it in a fridge, and then before the race, put it back in my system, despite the results of all three of those things effectively being the exact same thing, right? So it is, yeah, it is interesting how there are certain areas where it's like, oh, well, you can achieve that certain result if you want. It just has to be through these two means or this means over here, and you can't do it with this one over here because we've, you know, subjectively decided that that's not okay. You know, it is such a gray area, right? It's a difficult one.
Well, think about this, for example. Like, I think we all have this. Sorry, my dog has found someone at the door. we have this kind of, let's call it an obsession or whatever, with fairness. Things have to be fair, right? So what if, sorry.
Don't worry about it. Keep going.
Yeah, so things have to be fair. So hypothetically, what if one athlete said, all right, I'm spending my life savings to go to an altitude training camp and I'm going to be away from my family and everyone I love for 6 months. It's going to be tough on my relationship. It's going to be tough on my family. I'm not going to see my kids, or I'm going to be away. Like, you know, it's a big sacrifice in order to get that result, in order to you know, get that physiological result. And then another athlete just does the same training, but at, you know, around where they live, and go, oh, that's fine. I'm just going to stay with my family and do everything just as I would normally, but I'm just going to get all my blood worked like a couple of days out from the race, and I'm just going to go that way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's an interesting question, because it's like, you know, if I was that guy who decided to make the sacrifice to go to the training camp and be away from his family, like, I'd be pissed.
Like, only if you lost.
Only, yeah, actually, yeah, if you won, that's another variable as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's another variable, totally. If you won, you'd be like, ha, fuck you.
Yeah,
you know,
but do all the drugs you want. Like, I still
do all the drugs you want. I still beat you. But yeah, we've got, like, fairness is such an a subjective thing. Yeah. But with competitive sport, like with how many variables have appeared in competitive sport and how unfair things can be, especially when we look at things like, you know, background and privilege and psychological development in children and everything. Like, yeah, it's a disaster. It's a disaster of variables.
What do you think the consumer's responsibility is in all of this, right? The person who goes to the film about, you know, superheroes where all the actors are jacked because they're taking these drugs, or the people who go to, you know, like the baseball games back in the 90s where baseball was dying, no one was interested in it, and then all of a sudden these players started hitting crazy home run numbers, and it was turned out because they were on steroids that they were smashing the ball out of the park, metaphorically and literally.
Mm.
And so all of a sudden baseball was totally rejuvenated and everyone loved it. Obviously, there's an external pressure on people to perform a certain way and to be the best of the best. Everyone wants a hero, and they kind of don't care, it seems, about how they get there, as long as they're never found out to be doing the dodgy, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Like, do you think we're complicit when we buy a baseball ticket and go to a game, especially if it's come out and we know that that's happening within that sport, or if we, you know, go to a bodybuilding competition, or we go to a film where it's very obvious the person is, you know, taking something to get into that shape, but it's sort of under the table, no one mentions it. And yet, yeah, at the same time, out of the other side of our mouth, we'll say, oh yeah, steroids are bad though, kids, don't do them.
Well, imagine if like Marvel and DC were releasing films simultaneously and all the Marvel characters, all the actors from the Marvel film used like performance enhancing drugs and got in incredible shape, and yeah, the DC actors looked more like the physiques of, you know, like people who played Tarzan like back in the 50s.
So normal, like, human beings.
Yeah, they look like, you know, if you Google gymnastics and athletes from the 1920s.
Yeah.
You know, like, imagine they look like that. People would have shit to say. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, DC is shit now for multiple reasons. Like, you know, they would...
Sly dig there.
I'm a Marvel guy personally, but, you know, I very much enjoyed Man of Steel, that Superman movie. I thought that was great. But, like, yeah, the thing is, It comes down to what we choose to watch. You know, a lot of people are happy to complain about this stuff and say that it's immoral.
Yeah.
But when it comes time to buy the movie ticket and decide what we want to watch, even if on a surface level we know that it's immoral, there's a little part of us that really fucking still enjoys it. Like, I believe that the lack of transparency in Hollywood is disgusting, mm-hmm, when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs. But I can't help the fact that I fucking love watching Marvel films, and I love watching those films. It's, mm-hmm, it's this moral dilemma. And you know what? I think that's okay. I think it's okay to not be an absolute saint when it comes to what you might think morally in regards to this stuff and what you can't help but find entertaining.
Yeah.
The world would just be a much better place with this kind of stuff. And I think we're on our way there. If there was a lot more conversations like this, and if there was a lot more transparency,
yeah,
both with larger companies and Hollywood and entertainment, and with individuals on social media who choose to promote certain lifestyles, promote certain bodies, and flat out lie about the fact that they're taking performance enhancing drugs, there are issues there. Yeah. So
pausing you there, what do you think the biggest issues are there? So, you know, you see certain actors who have massive followings who are pushing 50 years old and, you know, have ridiculous amounts of muscle on their frame that is just so, it's light years away from what a natural person could look like. And yet will come out on social media and say, just train hard, guys, get it done. Make sure that you eat that chicken, broccoli and brown rice, guys.
Okay. So it's like, if you want someone to confide in you, if you want someone to be honest with you, they have to feel safe to do so, right? So I think transparency and honesty is a huge part of the way forward. But at the same time, we have to make these people feel like these actors and all these people feel that if they are transparent with this, we're not going to fucking crucify them for it.
Yeah.
Because they've worked, like a lot of those guys have worked really hard to get to where they are.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, right?
Yeah. So, and yet if one of them has the courage to say, you know what? Yes, I use performance-enhancing drugs for those roles. The media jumps on that with both feet, and all of a sudden that person's social media and private life is blowing up with fucking hate mail. When we knew
all along...
They'll
get cancelled today,
yeah,
right?
They'll get cancelled. So if we want change, it starts with us all taking that initiative to educate ourselves through reliable resources and intelligent conversations on these topics as individuals, and then actually be okay with the people who we look up to, maybe in sport or Hollywood, like telling us the truth, whatever that truth might be. Because right now we've set up this environment where we like it, but we kind of criticize it at the same time.
You can do it, but you've got to get away with it without anyone knowing.
Yeah, and it's just a bit of a moral disaster. But basically, we need transparency when it comes to performance enhancing drugs. We need everyone to know what they can achieve naturally, what they need to do in order to do that safely, and then where performance enhancing drugs play a role in progressing further beyond that. But for that, we need transparency, right? We need transparency. We need open communication. But for open communication to happen in any dynamic, people need to feel safe and there needs to be trust. And right now, there is such an intense environment around the use of performance enhancing drugs that I would feel, like definitely as a fitness professional, I would feel that if anyone that I knew came out is using performance enhancing drugs, when people may have been on the fence whether or not they were, I'd be concerned that they'd be crucified for it, despite all the hard work they've done, despite the great stuff that they've done.
I think that's where you need a movement, right? The kind of, it's kind of similar to the Me Too movement in that you needed this big push for everyone to feel safe and comfortable coming out about this, you know, systemic sexist culture in Hollywood. And then all of a sudden they did, right? It took one person that sort of stood up and said no to, you know, Harvey Weinstein. And then everyone just came out and was like, me too, me too, me too. And it seems like you probably need that kind of a movement in this area where so many people come out and say, like, sorry, guys, you kind of get to choose. Do you want these awesome films with these physiques that you guys look up to, or, you know, not? And we're all doing it because that's what the pressure that we're under. And that's, you know, the competition forces us to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you've got enough people doing that, then they can't all be cancelled, right? But that's the thing that's kind of insidious about it to me. It's the, you know, kind of in the Me Too one, it would be like you having been sexually assaulted at work and telling other people they need to come forward, but then you don't come forward when they do. It seems like a lot of these, everyone wants people to be honest, but then they themselves aren't. And I think a big thing that really pissed me off about Arnold Schwarzenegger, to sort of call him out in the Bigger, Faster, Stronger movie, was that he's all fine with drugs, steroids being used for bodybuilding, but then he was getting interviewed about steroids being used in sports, and he was like, oh, no, I think that's, you know, that steroids shouldn't be allowed and it's a really bad thing and blah, blah, blah. And you're kind of like, dude, I feel like you're kind of conflicted here. You know, there's two messages I'm getting.
Yeah. And this is where, if I was to play the devil's advocate here and speak from Arnold's perspective, his sport was an aesthetic-based sport. And sure, people are still competing, but everyone was using steroids.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, like he might have come out and say that, you know, steroids in events like the Olympics aren't ethical.
Unless so everyone's doing it.
Unless everyone has the opportunity to use equally. So, yeah.
But I would argue they do at that point, right? Like if you're going to the Olympics and you say you have absolutely zero opportunity to ever do performance enhancing drugs, I would be like, how did you end up there? You know, who do you know or not know in this case?
Well, this is where I think I would... if you'll humor me for a second, because I really want anyone listening to this to be able to come away from this conversation with some practical advice that they can actually put into practice. So, you know, what to do if you have body goals, if you have physique goals, how should you handle it? What should you expect from your training? And really, like, I want to be absolutely clear that if your goal is just to get into good shape, and be, you know, to be in good shape, be able to play a bit of sport on the weekend, to be able to participate in things, to be able to go for a hike, to feel good in your body, to fit into the size pants that you want to fit into, then you don't need performance enhancing drugs. Yeah. Like it is perfectly achievable and safe and, you know, perfectly achievable to be able to get into decent shape and be, you know, kind of around the size that you want to be and everything like that without using performance enhancing drugs. So not for a second would I want anyone listening to this to think that if they want to change their body shape, that performance enhancing drugs are actually necessary. It's not. This is where you can do that naturally. So if you want to just get in decent shape, you can do that naturally. It's fine. You just got to take care of things like your sleep and your self-care and your nutrition and get a mentor, not a personal trainer, get a fucking mentor. Like there's a difference. But then if training is just a cornerstone of your life to the point where it's just this thing that you love doing and you study it and you train every day and there's a specific type of training that you love doing, you know, and you just want to be able to do more of it. And
you're already at the limit.
And
right?
You've already been training naturally for a number of years and being trained naturally very well. You've reached maybe, you've gotten up to 80 to 90% of your genetic potential and you've done everything right. And you're getting into your 30s and maybe your 40s and you're finding that you just can't do what you used to, but training's just so important to you. Like then maybe looking at avenues like hormone, like legal hormone therapy. And you're like these clinics that do work with people's hormones to make sure that they feel good and everything like that. Then maybe that would be an avenue to take. Maybe. But to just get into good shape, that's not necessary. And another thing to throw into the mix here is like when a guy experiences low testosterone through lifestyle or genetic factors or anything like that, a lot of the symptoms of low testosterone can be misread as being kind of borderline clinical depression. So, and again, I'm not a doctor. I want to stress this. I'm a strength and conditioning coach. I'm not a doctor. But I have seen athletes suffering with low testosterone and dealing with overtraining exhibit the same symptoms that people see when they Google, do I have depression? So that I would be very curious to wonder how many people out there, how many athletes, how many men, how many women, whatever, are actually on antidepressants when it wasn't actually the fact that they needed antidepressants. It was the fact that maybe they were overtraining, maybe due to certain factors, their testosterone levels started to drop. And maybe simple hormone therapy or maybe some, you know, some simple adjustments there could have solved the problem. And that is literally me just thinking out loud. And I would love to speak to some actual doctors about this. I'm actually doing an Instagram live, or I'm recording a podcast next week with a doctor to talk about this exact thing. But it is such a complicated web that we're looking at here. But primarily, if you just want to get into good shape, you don't need performance enhancing drugs. You need a good mentor.
Yeah.
And you need to prioritize taking good care of yourself in terms of sleep and stress management, self-care and nutrition. More so than you need to prioritize training really, really hard, right?
Well, I think that's the problem. If you have people that look at steroids like shortcuts, you've got the wrong attitude, right? I imagine that the people who do take steroids and do it successfully, you know, in terms of their career and everything, it's like it is the cherry on top of the cake. They have this insane foundation that they've worked at for a very long time. They've hit the wall. They can't get past a certain limit, and then they take that to get it. They're not just, I'm going to start training in the gym after 3 weeks. Fuck it, I'll start taking steroids.
Because yeah, exactly. I didn't get what this personal trainer said. You know, my personal trainer's built like fucking Aquaman. And he said that in 12 weeks, I would look something like him. And fuck it, I'm just going to train for 12 weeks and then go straight to performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
No. That's just, you know, that attitude, I got no time for it. And it's just a huge mistake. That's one of the things that's inarguably a mistake, especially when we're seeing I see terrible, terrible things on TikTok where you like, you
see horrifying things,
horrifying things. You see some kid who's maybe 17, 18, barely legal drinking age.
Well, in Australia, right? Let alone the US.
In Australia, yeah. And you look at them and they're built like a Gymshark model.
Mm.
But you scroll back on their account and see them that same date last year, they were just built like your average teenager.
Yeah.
It's like, are you fucking joking? Like,
what are you doing? Too young.
Like, I said earlier in this conversation that I was interested to see the effects of peptides. I was interested to experience that. So I used CJC and epimorelin. But I only did that after close to a decade of training naturally. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't start training and jump on something like CJC or whatever, or, you know, let alone anabolic steroids straight out of the gate. Not to mention if someone's a teenager and in their early 20s and everything like that, they've still got plenty of human growth hormone and testosterone or whatever as it is, you know. So that would be something that's just, you people shouldn't do that. Like, it's a terrible idea.
We talked about fake natties at the start of the episode, but we never actually got into them and defined them, because they seem to be this interesting thing that's come out more recently with social media and things like TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. What is a fake natty?
Okay, so a natty is like a slang word that kind of fitness people use for natural. So natty, natural, as in a natural athlete that's not using performance enhancing drugs. So a fake natty is someone who says they're natural, but isn't. So essentially they're using a performance enhancing drug, but they're lying about it. And holy mother of God, how many of those people out there are there? So many. Ridiculous.
What are the incentives for these influencers on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube to pretend? Because a lot of the time, from what I see, the fake natties aren't athletes that are competing in a sport where it's illegal to use these drugs. They tend to be gym, you know, rats who go to the gym a lot, work out, want a good body, and develop a following, and then as a result get sponsored by certain large brands because of their size, their both the physical size and their following.
Yeah, well,
do you want to talk about the incentives there?
The incentives, like, there's a whole spectrum of incentives, you know, that they're on the high end of the scale, there are financial incentives for someone who has a social media account that starts getting a lot of attention. But then on a very personal level, you know, just fuck boys in clubs, you know, like what? They're just these young
lads. Might want to explain what that is for people listening.
Well, I'm so sorry about my language on this episode and the expressions that I'm using.
It's okay because we're talking to each other like we normally would. So it's always good exposure to people, obviously. I'll have to put a disclaimer at the start, but it's fine.
It's fine. Like if you don't listen to it in the living room in the evening when your kids are about.
And your grandmother.
Yeah.
Because at this point, she'll be offended at this point where you say, fuck boy, all the drug talk is fine. But this is where she'll turn off and be like, these guys went too far.
Yeah. God, but anyway, a friend of mine was talking to me the other day about personal authenticity. So this is the authentic me talking about these fuckers. So essentially, we're talking about the kind of lads that just go to clubs every weekend to pick up.
Yeah. And what's picking up? Again, I have to be sensitive to the fact that many people may not know these slang terms. That's why I'm calling you out.
To take ladies home.
To hook up with ladies casually, right?
To hook up with women casually.
And women can pick up too, guys. Girls, guys, everyone listening, but yes.
Bearing in mind, though, the initial term that I used was fuckboy. Yeah. So we're talking about the masculine version of that, where these guys go to clubs, you know, to pick up.
They're walking ego, right? They're walking ego. All their goal is to get as big and be as attractive as possible, at least according to what they think, to the opposite sex so that they can take home yet another person they've met out and about and add them to the list, right?
So it's, and again, it's not really objective attractiveness. It's just attention grabbing.
Yep.
Like there's just, you know, certain physiques are in the clubbing world or whatever, or just, you know, music festivals, whatever, certain physiques are just going to grab attention, you know? So when you talk about incentives, on one end of the scale, there might be financial incentives from a social media account that blew up. And on the other end of the scale, just, you know, like if a lad gets jacked, and by jacked, obviously we mean large and muscular.
Juiced and up. Lean.
Juiced up,
although it's not, jacked is not necessarily juiced up where they've been using the juice steroids. They can just be jacked in that they're very muscly.
Yeah, and on that end of the scale, it's just attention.
Yeah,
and not just attention from the opposite sex either. Like just amongst there's this the whole toxic masculinity element of this really comes into it. There's actually, there was an incredible study talked about in a great book called The Adonis Complex by, I think it was, one of the doctors mentioned in Bigger, Faster, Stronger. So in The Adonis Complex, the concept of the ideal male physique is talked about extensively. And when we talk about toxic masculinity and how that plays into this physique, when women were actually interviewed and asked what male bodies do you find most attractive, it's not like the results that came back from those trials and those tests, whatever we want to call them, the overwhelming results pointed to the fact that as far as heterosexual women were concerned, the ideal male body was a much more reasonable and kind of in proportion body than what most young men think is the ideal body. So the irony here is that a lot of this steroid culture is just men impressing their mates.
But it's the same with makeup, I think, and women who take the beauty and fashion thing to the full extreme too, where I think, you know, my dad has this story. He worked with a drop-dead gorgeous young woman, you know, that he got to know and would go out with everyone together. And I remember him saying, you know, why the hell, he told me the story. He said to her, why the hell do you wear these high heels everywhere? Like, is it, you know, she was complaining about them being so painful and everything. He's like, you're married. You don't have to impress your husband. And she's like, I don't wear these for him. I wear these to impress other women. And I think it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting window into the whole signaling an appearance thing for both of the different sexes, because men, yeah, I want to be big and strong, not just to necessarily signal to women that, hey, I'm big and strong, but another thing is to other men, right? It goes both ways. And so it is interesting when you peel that back that a lot of bodybuilders, you would imagine, are probably like, I don't give a crap necessarily about what women think. I just want other guys to be impressed.
Yeah, this is for my bros, you know? Like,
I'm yet to meet a woman who has, I mean, I don't, the conversation doesn't come up that often, but I'm yet to meet a woman who says, you know, my favorite body is the juiced up to the gills, steroid head dude who's, you know, competing at Arnold's next bodybuilding thing. That's the only body that turns me on. Everything else is disgusting and it's just not my thing. I'm yet to ever meet anyone like that. The same way that I'm yet to meet a guy who says the only girls that I'll date are the ones that have got anorexia, because that's the only kind of body I find attractive.
Oof. Yeah. That hit like a train. Yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking the opposite end of the spectrum. Like, there are definitely, yeah, to be honest, although I do work with eating disorders, I actually flat out say that anorexia is a different thing. It's a very different condition to, say, bulimia. Obviously, there can be crossover and someone can have both, but again, I do work with people experiencing bulimia, but anorexia is a life-threatening condition that that requires, you know, special help that I'm not qualified to give.
Sorry to interrupt you there. Do you think that the inverse of anorexia is those mass monsters? Have you seen those guys?
I have seen very, very large men burst into tears in the gym because they feel small.
Yeah.
Sorry
to pause you. Mass monsters, guys, are these, not just bodybuilders, but men who have this complex about getting as big as possible. Like, it's not about competing in a bodybuilding show necessarily, but it's almost like, I think from some of the videos that I was watching about these guys, because it's just, you know, a train wreck that you can't not look at. They were sort of like, this is a mental illness. Like, I can't stop. I'm taking so many steroids, you know, so much steroids, and I'm eating so much food because I'm obsessed with getting bigger. And I just can't allow myself to get smaller. And I remember hearing that and thinking, this is almost the exact opposite of what I imagine anorexia is, where it's like, I can't imagine myself getting bigger. I just want myself to get smaller.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't really, for me to actually comment on anything in regards to clinical disorders, I feel like I would need to have an extremely well-rounded knowledge. And although I am, you know, familiar with those conditions and those circumstances, they go beyond what I professionally work with. Like, for example, if someone came to me with one of those problems, I would be happy to work with them, though I would work with them, you know, if they came to me in the name of whether it be recovery or, you know, a more reasonable training program or nutrition program, and just if they wanted to get things back to some semblance of normal, I would work with them, but I would want them to be also working with a registered psychologist, psychotherapist, like a doctor as well.
Yep.
So this is that there was, you know, open communication between me and that person, and it became like a bit more of a team effort. So yeah, that's those two ends of the spectrum. That starts to get dark. Like where that goes.
It's interesting. Like, again, sorry to interrupt you, but I wonder how old these things are too, right? Like, it would be interesting to know if, you know, anorexia existed thousands of years ago, the same with guys trying to get as big as possible, whether obviously they didn't have steroids, but you wonder if these things are much more a manifestation of social media and modern times, where we are just bombarded constantly with better looking people than we've ever seen ever.
Yeah. It's, I think obviously the body dysmorphia amongst men using steroids, as far as history is concerned, that is a relatively recent thing, because historically speaking, until steroids became almost mainstream, there's been a limit to how big people can get. Every now and then, you know, we'd come across someone who was just, you know, genetically massive and would do the appropriate training or whatever to build on that further. But there was, historically speaking, there was less scope for someone to use a substance in conjunction with training in order to become a fucking giant. So yeah, that, as far as history is concerned, that's a relatively new thing.
I know, you go and watch 300 and you'll never look at the Spartans again that way, because they did not look like that.
Well, the funny thing is, like, when we look at physiques, there's a lot that can be gained as far as aesthetics from being really lean. But that's also like a dicey, kind of somewhat dangerous territory. If you look at the physique of a lightweight or middleweight boxer or lightweight or middleweight fighter, for example, they look much bigger in some ways than they actually are, because their body fat is so low, you can see all their muscles.
Well, and that's why the advice usually is, if you want to look bigger, lose weight before thinking about
trying to put... That's where shit starts to get on. It can get to a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Because when we look at natural bodybuilding and truly natural bodybuilding, a lot of the guys doing natural drug-tested bodybuilding get the look that they get from being crazy lean, from being really, really lean. And after walking that path myself, with, you know, not being super big, but at the time I think I was around 77 kilograms, but just really, really lean. That can venture into eating disorder territory as well. So yeah. It's like, we don't necessarily need to, a lot of guys, for example, right now in the gym, wanting to get a certain appearance, would be able to get an appearance that they're really happy with by not gaining any more muscle, but by losing body fat.
And that's almost all diet based, right? Not necessarily training.
Almost all diet. Cardio. But still, if that is done the wrong way and the wrong headspace is taken into that formula and into that approach and into that process, then you'll end up working yourself closer to having an eating disorder than you will to the result that you actually want.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Well, finishing up, because I think we've been talking for over an hour now, is there a silver lining to all of this now? Do you see things the way that they currently are as getting better, getting worse? You know, how do you see it as it currently stands?
Well, I think things are getting better, personally, like, just purely because there are more conversations like this happening. Like, in some ways, like, I would like to consider myself an optimist with this kind of thing. Like, someone could easily say that things are getting crazy out of hand because of social media and people on TikTok using crazy amounts of performance-enhancing drugs and blah, 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 blah. But I would like to believe that with everyone being able to talk to each other about these things more and a few key people creating some really transparent and quality content.
And people calling out the liars and the cheats and the fakes, right? So, I mean, you may not necessarily like them and what they're doing, but for every person who's out there faking this sort of stuff and trying to get a leg over everyone else, there seems to be now the ability for the average person to also criticize, critique, create content that questions this stuff and gets the message out there.
Exactly. So whether or not we'll ever see like a dramatic change in things like the appearance of mainstream Hollywood superheroes or whatever, like, who knows? But as long as we can all keep having these conversations and supporting each other in one way or another, doing our best to be, rather than judgmental, try to be understanding of a certain person's position in regards to what their career might require from them in order to get, you know, the rewards for all the work that they've put in. And, you know, open communication, transparency, all those kind of things, and just getting good mentors. Mm-hmm. If you have fitness goals, like all these kind of things can lead to a very happy and healthy dynamic with not only training and food, but body image and everything like that too. So as long as we do whatever we like, as long as when we set a goal, as far as a body goal or something like that, we get good information and we go as far as we can naturally, really, before experimenting with other options. We, you know, work hard, take care of ourselves, and then acknowledge that really the only people who do have an excuse for doing this stuff are the kind of people who make training and maybe even competition just an absolute cornerstone of their life.
Well, their living depends on it, right?
Yeah, their living depends on it, and it's just what they do. If we can be a bit more understanding towards those people, maybe we can encourage a little bit more transparency. But at the end of the day, very much like run your own race. Like if you've got body goals or if you've got fitness goals or anything like that, try not to look too much at the person next to you or who's on the TV or who's on Instagram or who's on anything like that. Get a good mentor, run your own race, learn what you need to learn to make the most of your own body and get as close as you can to your own genetic potential. And when you're at that point, then you might be in a position to have a conversation about where you'd like to go from there. But most of us, if we train intelligently, take care of ourselves intelligently, and do actually reach something that resembles our genetic potential, most of us would be quite happy with that.
100%.
It's just that so many of us are being sold the wrong expectations and getting frustrated and getting sad and everything like that. So be clear on what's achievable.
And don't forget, I guess, you know, if I can add my little cherry on top there, that health and health and longevity should be as important as, you know, your physique and what it looks like, I would imagine, right? You should be, you should be equally or more concerned about being able to maintain a healthy body into the future than being able to look huge and ridiculous but shave 10 years off your life.
Absolutely. And we have to remember, like I've met a number of guys who were absolute Adonises when they were in their 20s, 30s, and even 40s. But because of the way that they trained and the drugs that they used, they didn't retain their quality of life into their 60s and 70s. And although it might be really easy in our 20s and 30s to kind of say, oh, that's so far away, it doesn't matter, I just want to be amazing right now.
Yeah.
There is nothing, or there are few things more heartbreaking than meeting a guy, more heartbreaking in like the fitness world sense, than meeting a guy in his 60s and 70s or a woman, like meeting anyone as they get into those years, whose entire identity was wrapped around being physically strong and fit, but they did it in such a way that means that the final 30 years of their life looks nothing like anything that they've ever associated as being truly them.
Yeah.
And even though we might think, you know, when we talk about longevity and how important that is, even though we might think being 60 years old is like a long way away,
it catches up.
Most of us now who are alive, when we reach 60, we've still got another 30 or 40 years. And unless we take care of longevity, to make sure that we are not only healthy and fit right now, but we're healthy and fit then too. 30 or 40 years from 60 to whenever our time is up is a long fucking time to be miserable. So it really matters. Longevity actually totally matters.
Don't sell the future for the present, right?
Absolutely.
Anyway, dude, how can people find out more about you and what you do? And if they want to get in contact with you to actually have a real fucking mentor, where can they do so?
Come and see me on Instagram at the moment. My Instagram handle is just mkaincoaching, M-K-A-I-N coaching. And I'd be happy to have a chat with you.
Yeah, send him a message. He usually replies.
Usually, unless it's Pete.
That's it. 2 weeks later, scene. thanks, Maz. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, brother. Thank you.